Good morning, 1105. How are you doing? Happy Easter. Easter is still going on. Couple things I wanted you to know about. I've always wanted to do this in a church where there's a place in the Bible where they're trying to build something and people are giving money and they tell them to quit giving because there's too much money and they can't count it all. No kidding. We want to celebrate our fundraiser for the Blue Bus. Mike, if you would come forward and tell them about it. And we actually exceeded our goal early, so we're asking you, please don't give us any more money for this, please. It's really exciting, though.
Good morning, everyone. Psalm 7 says, I will sing praise to the name of the Lord. And I come bearing great news, a good report about the Blue Bus fundraiser, about what God is doing through his people here at Strongsville United Methodist and here in Northeast Ohio through the Blue Bus Ministry. Our initial goal when we started the fundraiser was $25,000 after fundraising expense, and I'm pleased to report that the Lord has provided, and we've exceeded that goal. The number currently stands around $27,600. So. Praise be to God. So when you see the new Blue Bus outside, you hear that new roar of the Cummings diesel engine, be prepared to come out maybe one night a month and serve the Lord. Thank you very much, and God bless.
One other quick announcement. We have a new discovery class starting this Wednesday. For those of you who want to know a little bit more about our church, how to get involved, where to plug into ministry, and we would love to have you. It's 4 weeks long, and if you've not been through a discovery class, we invite you to come to that. So there's this one pastor who has said there's a whole bunch of things that go on in his life that he doesn't quite understand, but he can still use them, like computers, like light switches. Like a physicist actually said that all the internal mass of the universe was actually at one time the size of a dot that could fit on the head of a pin. I mean, can you get that? I don't know if I can, but quantum physicists tell us that the universe is really complex and wild, and that all of you have been made with a DNA string that's unlike any other living DNA string ever created, that really there's this software package you've come from that is distinctly unique and so complex that scientists and physicists keep studying them and finding out new things about them, and yet it's working, and you can believe it without understanding it. So we also believe in this church that God can reanimate matter and bring back from the dead something to life through his grace and love. And we believe, too, that God can change a human life that was once broken, can use brokenness to bring beauty and hope to the world. Welcome to worship. Welcome to the hope, the real distinct hope that we can trust and believe and even work on things that we don't understand. Welcome.
Good morning again. I want to read the scriptures to you. They're found in John chapter 21. If you have a Bible, you could open to that. We're looking at one of the post-resurrection experiences where Jesus reveals himself, Peter. If I were God, you're supposed to be thinking right now, I'm really glad Dave isn't, but I would have done something like called CNN and had a big crowd assembled and said something like, ta-da. I wouldn't have risen before the sunrise and then intimately shown myself to individuals who loved me. I would have made a splash. I think Jesus needs a marketing manager or something. But anyhow, this is where he shows himself to Peter. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my lambs. A second time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And Jesus said to him, tend my sheep. He said to him a third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter felt hurt because he had said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." And Jesus said, "Feed my sheep. Very truly I shall tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt and go wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go." He said this to indicate the kind of death by which he would glorify God. And after this, he said to him, "Follow me." The word of God for the people of God. Bill Hybels, the famous pastor, is a famous pastor in Chicago, Illinois. He tells the story of how he would race off at lunch and hit a gym, work out quickly, take a shower, and get back to work within 45 to 50 minutes. He said he was always on a hurry, always on pace. There was a man who knew him from being well known, and he tried to knock up a friendship and a conversation with Bill when he would just run in, want to work out, take a shower, get out of there. The guy would be really pleasant, and Bill thought, maybe I should just take the time and be polite and build a relationship. So they started the beginning of a conversational relationship. One particular day when Bill was taking a shower, he said he was just ready to be finished, and he looked out the curtain, and he noticed that this gentleman was like looking both ways, and then he reached over and grabbed Bill Hybels' towel because he had forgotten his own. And in Bill's own words, he said, and he violated it. You know what I mean? Like he used his towel all over himself. Bill said he got out of the shower. He said he wasn't going to touch the towel. He was kind of disgusted, frustrated, went, got dressed, wet, went to work. And the next day when he went back to the gym, guess who wanted to bump up next to him and have a conversation as if nothing happened? And Bill said, "I was chilly. I was frustrated. Didn't want to go through the details of telling him that I had seen what I had seen. But as time went on, he said, there was a towel between us." Right? You know what I mean in a relationship? Of something where something goes wrong or someone says something and then you pretend that nothing ever happened, but the pretense doesn't quite work out and there's a towel between you. I know on staff at the church where I served for many years, we used to say to each other, "All right, Dave," they would say, there's a towel between us. Can we iron this out?" And what that language essentially meant is, you are worth the trouble of an awkward conversation. It's as if to look somebody in the eye and say, you are of value enough to expend gritty kind of love, and if you wouldn't be proud or defensive, maybe we could work something through. Jesus realizes there's a towel between he and Peter, and now he will go to the high cost of honesty and investment in Peter to have a very difficult exchange with him. You remember the story? The last time he had seen him, there was a final dinner where when Jesus talked of his death, Peter said, "Even if all these people fall away from you, I'll be the last one who does that." He basically says to Jesus, "If everybody else falls away, I'll go the whole way to death with you." And Jesus responds, "Before the morning comes or before the cock crows, three times you will deny me." Peter's thinking in his head, "Never." Peter just simply doesn't know himself or Jesus very well. Peter follows at a distance, and a servant girl of the high priest Caiaphas, after Jesus is arrested, approaches Peter in public and says, "You're one of them. I saw you with him." Remember? Peter said, "I don't even know who you're talking about, and I've never met the man." Second time he's confronted by the same servant girl. She says, "No, I'm sure." She says to her friends, "I saw him with Jesus." This time, Matthew includes a little footnote of what Peter says to remove himself from proximity of knowing Jesus. He takes a rabbinic oath, or in Semitic culture, an oath that essentially calls a curse down upon himself if he's lying. He uses God's name to deny God and says a second time, "Never have seen him. I'll take an oath against ever knowing him." A third time, the servant girl said, "I'm positive it was you. You're with him. You speak like him." And to this time, Peter, according to Matthew, begins to use vulgarity, awful, coarse, vulgar language to remove himself from knowing Jesus. I don't know the man you're talking about, laced with profanity. And then a rooster crows, and Peter, broken, realizes that he was the first to confess his love and now would be the first to deny. Loud, confident, cocky, assured that there was a stage of his life where he thought, I can do this. I can do this follow Jesus thing, no problem at all. In fact, watch me do it and let me be your model for it. And now Jesus, I think, either he makes Peter's Easter or he sort of ruins it in some ways by bringing up the towel that's between them. Essentially, what Jesus is doing is saying, like, can we put the ham aside and the Easter egg hunt over just for a minute? We have a hard conversation, Peter, to have. Peter is worth the energy and the love now that Christ will offer him in this way. There is an old saying that says, there's two kinds of people that cut meat. There's surgeons and butchers. They both cut meat, but for totally different reasons. And now Jesus will cut the heart of Peter as if surgically to break it and open it and reveal something new about the nature of God and who Jesus is. He asks him three questions as if to say, don't blow this, Peter, because this is your chance now to redeem or come clean upon yourself. He says to Peter, do you love me? In the Greek language, do you mind if I just do a little Greek? I don't like it sometimes when pastors do that, but I had a seminary professor who used to say, your Greek ought to be showing like your underwear. It should be there, but people shouldn't see it. But in this particular case, I think it's really necessary. There's five Greek words or more for the word love in Greek. So it's different to say I love the Indians or ice cream as it is to say I love my children or my wife Angie. They would never use the same word for that. Jesus uses this word, do you love me, agape, meaning unconditional, unsurrendered, no matter what. It's a love that goes like this. I will love you not if you do something or because you do something. I will love you, period. It is a divine kind of inspired love. This is the love of which Jesus asks of Peter, and Peter responds this way, Lord, you know that I love you. But he uses the word philo, or friendship. He's saying this, I wouldn't say that I love you, I'm just saying that I sort of love you. Like, I would want to be buddies again. I want to establish a friendship, or I'm fond of you. Might be a really good translation. But Jesus is asking for this. Can you feel it? And Peter is saying, I can only give this. A second time, Jesus says, no, I said, do you love me with the word agape, unconditionally? And a second time, Peter says, oh, Lord. And I imagine now his face is flushing, and his eyes come to the ground, and he begins to even tremble for a moment to say, no, Jesus, honestly, I can't say that I love you. I can only say that I love you. Like, I want to be friend. So Peter now knows that he's a failure. Peter now knows that he's broken. Peter now gets that he can't live up to his own standards or God's standards. So now this third time Jesus says, so Peter, do you love me? And this time he uses the word philo, or are you be my friend? And grieved, Peter says, I've told you twice, I'll tell you a third time. I said, I'll be your friend. Okay, if I were God, come on, think it at least. I'm glad Dave isn't. I would say, you know what, I'm asking for this, and you're giving me this, done. I'll move on and find somebody who can say the right thing. I'd say, you know, Peter, I gave you three times to redeem yourself, and now you've goofed it all up. I'd say to him, you know, as the pastor of the church, I mean, as Jesus, I need somebody to run committees and disciple people and lead small groups. And if you're not going to be this and you're only this, then forget it. I mean, like, I would say to Peter,
you seem to only want me when the ship's going down, or when you need a favor, or when you're at the end of the rope, or when you need fire insurance. I wonder, like, what sort of God is it that accepts people the way they are instead of the way they should be? What sort of God is it who, when he asks for this, and we honestly can say, I don't know, but I'll start here, in honesty, who's willing to say, okay, here we go. Answer, Jesus is that kind of God. The bravado is gone from Peter. His MVP status as the best disciple is gone. His cockiness and heroic, why can't the world be more like me, has been kicked out of him by the pain and circumstance of his life. And now he just gets it. He gets this. He's a broken, flawed, messed up person who's no better than the person who's sitting next to him in church. Like at the foot of the cross, Peter realizes we're all made of the same stuff and there's nothing heroic about him anymore. And I think Jesus thinks this, oh good, I think I have you now right where I finally wanted you. Honest, real, transparent. And now Peter just gets it. Four times Paul says to the Corinthian church, I come to you bragging in my weakness, not in my strengths or in my abilities. He says, for when you see my weaknesses, then you know how strong God can be. There's something about this encounter with Peter that gives me this hope. People who come to church like me can move from proud and defensive to dependent and vulnerable. Peter begins, even as a Christian or a Christ follower, guarded, protective, and not aware of his own flaws or his limits. He comes and he's easily focused on the mistakes and sins of others. He gives his opinion even when it's not asked for. Peter has this amazing ability to say something even if it's stupid. And don't look at me when I say that. Don't. I hate that. Peter is one who holds grudges and blames others and avoids painful situations. And when he sees pain, he wants to say a cliche to get people out of it rather than have the grittiness to move into pain and live with people there. He sees people as resources to be used by God or by him. But now there's a shift that has gone on where the brokenness of Peter, and he's been introduced to Jesus in a new way. But even more, he's been introduced to Peter in a new way. Now he can be dependent and vulnerable. It doesn't have to be about him. And it doesn't have to be about his own goodness. He doesn't have to drive around the Strongsville Mall and think, why can't people just be like me? Wouldn't the world be a better place? Now Peter is approachable and open. He's aware and he's slower to judge, quicker to listen. I'll bet he's more soft and curious about the stories of others rather than to make assumptions. Peter is one now who can see the truth about himself and know that he's just a broken, flawed knucklehead like the rest of us. And it will be on the back of this that Jesus will build his real church. Peter no longer will see his strengths as trophies and successes and pretenses and protective. But now he'll see the church as a messy, crazy place where folks can see us as broken and flawed people who heal in the love that Jesus gives to us. There's something about this new Peter that will be magnetic. And to this end, then, Jesus offers these words, then feed my sheep, then love my lambs, and take care of my people. If you really love Christ, and I don't mean necessarily even unconditionally or perfectly or beautifully, but if you just even start somewhere down here at a base beginning of love, I think he puts in our hearts a desire to not so much give our opinions and argue people to faith, but to show a sense of sustaining, defending, nourishing, encouraging, strengthening kind of love to other people, so that they might see and experience a grace that has captured our hearts too. Tend my sheep, he says. feed my little ones, if you really mean it then. Even if you don't love me here, love me here, he says. And reach out to somebody and notice and care. Said Martin Luther King Jr., everybody can be great because anybody can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve somebody. You don't have to make your subject and verb agree to serve. You only need a heart that has experienced grace and wants to share it. A soul generated by love can be used by God. Jesus would say it this way: whoever wishes to be great among you must become a servant, and whoever will be the greatest among you will be the one who serves all. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. On this day, when we remember a God who comes and asks for this, but is willing sometimes to receive this, we think about serving people who live with us and around us, and people who we don't even know. Some are soft and cute and fluffy and cuddly little sheep, and some are smelly and difficult and give you sheep bite when you come close to them. But in that way, I wonder if Jesus is saying, in the end, we will be judged this way. We who claim the love of Christ, we will be judged this way. What we do with the grace that's given us. Let me close with this quick story. Many of you have heard the Velveteen Rabbit book. Do you remember it from years ago? It's about a skin horse who is an old, banged up nursery stuffed animal, and a rabbit called the Velveteen Rabbit, who's brand new and sparkly and kind of fancy. What is real? Asked the new rabbit as they were laying side by side in the nursery one day. Does it mean having a buzz inside and being all shiny and new? Real isn't how you're made, said the skin horse. It's a thing that happens to you when someone loves you for a long, long time and not just plays with you, but really loves you. Then you become real. Does it hurt? Asked the rabbit. Oh, yeah, said the skin horse. It hurts. But when you're real, you don't mind being hurt anymore. Does it happen all at once, like being wound up or bit by bit? Oh, said the skin horse, you become. It takes a long time. That's why it doesn't often happen to people who break easily or who have sharp edges or who have to be kept carefully. Generally, by the time you're real, most of your hair has fallen off or turned gray, or your eyes drop out, or you become loose in the joints and you become very shabby looking. But these things don't matter at all, because once you're real, you can't be ugly except to people who just don't get it. I suppose you think you're real, the rabbit said to the skin horse, and then thought, oh, I shouldn't have said that. Maybe he's sensitive. But the skin horse only smiled and said, a long, long time ago, I was loved deeply. A great many years ago, I became real, and once you become real, you can never be unreal again. It lasts, said the skin horse, forever. So is this not the story of Peter, who becomes real when he realizes what a fool he's been, who has the energy of God, who takes him not where he should be, but where he is, who comes to an awakening of the hope that God takes broken and weak people and manifests his strength and his beauty and his goodness when only we risk that kind of vulnerability.